Hi, welcome everybody. Welcome to the Be Healthy Summit and welcome Pam Costa.
Hi, nice to be here.
Pam Costa, MA, left her high-tech career at Apple and Facebook to found Down to There to help the world talk more openly about sex. Through her writing and speaking, she encourages deeper exploration of our sexual self and how that impacts our relationships. Pam is also passionate about raising awareness within medical and mental health communities about the positive impact of peer support on female sexual health, recently presenting her research on this topic at TEDx Palo Alto. So thank you for sharing your time with us, Pam. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little about yourself. What is your story?
Sure. So this is a second career for me. This is not where I started off, but I had, I think like a lot of people when they end up doing career changes, had this like life experience where I had been struggling with something for a really long time. In my case, it was with sexuality in my marriage, and ended up seeing someone. I ended up seeing a sex coach with my husband, and ended up finding out that the way that I had been living, the way that I had been thinking about sex was very different than how I could be living or could be thinking about it. And just kind of had this transformative experience and decided to actually explore it more and more over time, to the point where I ended up actually switching careers into this one now.
Wow. Okay. So that was so important for you that you said, I'm going to quit my job and just focus on sexual health or vitality.
Yes. Yes. As I was going through that experience with the woman that we were working with, every single session with her, I would have these moments of thinking, wow, like women should know this. People should know this. Why weren't we taught this? And it's just slowly, you know, I kind of just started with my friends, talking with my friends about it, and they kind of had that same experience, like, wow, why aren't we taught this? And then, yeah, just starting to attend medical conferences, getting my master's, like all these things as I just kept diving deeper into the topic.
Why do you think so many women are tired of sex, or why does that sound familiar to so many women? What do you think is the reason?
Right, because it's such a stereotype that we see, right? That it's the television show where the woman's like, "Oh, I'm too tired, or I have a headache, or I have to wash my hair." And interestingly, I do think that is the cultural stereotype that it's women. But frankly, I think it's not quite even. Like I would say, like of the couples that I see, maybe 60% of the time it's the woman with the lower desire, and maybe 40% it's the male. So I think this is not a gender specific answer, actually. But I think there's lots of reasons why we end up not desiring sex. The biggest one for me is just all of the cultural messaging that we get around sex. And, you know, for me, for instance, I'll just give the example of what it looked like for me. You know, first of all, I didn't hear much about sex when I was younger. You know, it wasn't like it was a big topic of conversation in my family. What I did hear about it from like school or church were pretty negative messages. Like, this is dangerous. You got to protect yourself. It should only be with someone you're like deeply in love and married with and for procreation. And I think what happened for me, and I think happens with a lot of people, is when you get these messages that this thing that you might otherwise kind of be naturally curious about is bad or unsafe, what can tend to happen is if we have that natural curiosity show up, like, you know, maybe I'm, you know, even as young as like 4 years old and I have a natural curiosity about my body parts, and then I get a message from someone around me like, don't touch that, don't do that, I kind of have this this shutdown effect happen. And so whether it was the message that I could get an STI or I could get pregnant or I should not do this or not do that, basically a message to like keep it in my pants. For me, and I think for a lot of people, that muscle to like shut it down got stronger than the muscle to be curious about it. And so, you know, fast forward decades and someone says, do you want sex? Like I'm not even there, you know, like my body is just not. Yeah. All of those cultural messages had kind of turned me off.
And what can you do to break up that thought pattern?
Sure. So if that's the case, right. If you're walking around that way, and also I just want to like point out, and this is part of the breaking up the thought pattern too, is just realizing that, like, first of all, that's normal, you know, whether you're a woman and have walked around with the message, like, you know, don't be a slut, or if you're a guy and you've walked around with the message, don't be a creep, because that's very prevalent right now too, right? And you've gotten really used to shutting it down. Just first of all, to know that that's normal. For me, when I, you know, I had this exact conversation we're having now with our sex coach, and I remember her going, yeah, like that's normal. And even her just saying that was like such a relief for me to know that that is normal. That the way that I'm feeling now makes sense. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not broken. So I think for people to just know that their experiences, kind of whatever they are, whether they're like what I've just described or something else entirely, that is well within the range of normal experiences around sexuality. So I think that to me is first and foremost. And also to know that, like, if you don't want to change anything about how your sexuality is or how your desire is or whether or not you want sex, like, you don't desire to change it, like, no problem. That's okay. Because I actually think that if you do want change, it's almost impossible to get change unless you really have some amount of like self-compassion and love for where you're at. So I say that first, almost before answering your question, okay, now what do we do? So first of all, know you're not alone, know you're normal. And then from there, my experience is that it really is. So if the root of it is I'm not as connected to my body as I could be, how do I connect with my body? What are all the different ways that I can do that? And you can hear, even just as I'm saying that, like my voice is slowing down. I'm actually like kind of grounding and noticing my body. You know, I've been rushing around this morning. And so just kind of noticing, oh wait, like I have a body, you know. I think that's the start of it, is just becoming more mindful of your body.
Yeah, that's also what we do in yoga practice.
Yeah.
That's a tool then to get more connected.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so what did you do? Sorry, I just missed it, cut out for a second there.
No, that's what we do in our yoga practice. I'm a yoga teacher, and that's what it's all about, to connect with your body, and then you can get into your mind and, yeah.
Absolutely.
With your breath, but first of all, it's the body.
Yeah, I you know, when I'm talking, whether it's I'm talking with a girlfriend or talking with a client, I always liken it to like if you went to a restaurant and you picked up the menu, and if you were just using your head, because I think for me, when I was like disconnecting my body, I basically became like a floating head walking around in the world. And so it was this idea that my mind will figure out what's right here. You know, am I supposed to have sex? Am I supposed to do this? And so when I walk into a restaurant, if I'm using just my head, it would be like looking at the menu and ordering based off like the nutritional ingredients, you know, it's just using my head. This is a healthy thing. This is the nutrients I need, whatever. But when I tap into the wisdom of my body, and pay attention to my body, I might notice as I'm reading the menu that my mouth is salivating, or my heart feels nostalgic for this dish, or my stomach is growling, right? Or maybe as I read that one, I smiled, right? There's just so many ways that our body reacts to everyday situations. But if we're not paying attention or aware of how our body is reacting, we're not leveraging that. And I think when it comes to sexuality, you know, so many couples that I work with, they've got the script. they literally are just executing a script that they've learned works historically, which is great. You don't want to throw away the script, but they're also not like tapping into their body in the moment. What do I want right now? Which is where, you know, things get more interesting and varied. And
okay, so you don't think couples who have that experience, they don't necessarily need a sex coach? They can figure it out by themselves?
Yeah. The way that I think about this is, you know, people say life is short. I'm like, oh, life is long, hopefully, right? And, you know, I like to think about sex as how you think about anything else, you know, finances, nutritional health, physical health, like sex is this thing in and of itself. And just like you'd learn about any of those other things, right? You probably read some articles, maybe you watch a good TED talk, you maybe grab a book, you'd have conversations with your friends, maybe you'd seek out a financial advisor or a yoga teacher, maybe you take classes or a weekend workshop. And I think about sex the same way. Like, just like any of those things, you could absolutely do it yourself. Maybe you're the kind of person that can read some things, you know, and you're good. You can implement the strategies. Other people need a really big, great sex team. You know, I, because of my history and being so disconnected, it was really lovely to have a team. My team consisted of friends, of different teachers, of different workshops and classes and books and things like that. But yeah, I do think couples can absolutely, you know, start by just talking about it with each other, which I say that now thinking, oh, that sounds so lovely. But I know in the beginning, like anytime I tried to talk about it with my partner, that was a tension-filled conversation because of the long history we had together. So sometimes that feels too daunting of a place to start. And so thinking of my relationship with sexuality as something that starts as an inside job and something I explore kind of on my own, you know, reading books on my own, watching things on my own, talking to my friends before I talk to my partner, it was also helpful.
Okay, so what do you think our sexual health has to do with our overall state of health?
Yeah, it's so funny because I think like right-sized, it's part of, you know, a pie of a lot of different slices that isn't more important or bigger than another slice, right? You've got all these things in life that contribute to our well-being. And I think right-sized sex is just a part of that. What I notice can happen is when there's challenges around sexuality, that size of the pie seems to grow in importance or in stress level. And so I notice, you know, for me, it's like, oh, life is so good. Like, I'm healthy and well and all these things, but there's this one thing and it causes a lot of stress in me. So I just joke with people. I'm like, okay, no one needs to have sex at all. And or a certain amount. But if that's causing you stress that you're not having it or not having it a certain amount or a certain kind, then it becomes a challenge to your overall well-being because you become stressed about it. You start to feel, you know, self-esteem challenges or guilt or frustration. And then that really does impact our overall wellness. And I do think there's something around just this concept of being in our bodies that I notice I enjoy life much more when I'm in my body at all, and also including all of my body, right? So I think there is a way that outside of kind of removing stress, which contributes to overall well-being, there's also there's lessons you can learn from improving your relationship with sexuality that translate into the ability to be more embodied, more present, more alive, generally speaking.
Yeah. Do you think stress, like working too much, also has an impact I was in LA a couple of times, and I was so surprised that almost everybody said, I have two or three jobs to get around here. And when they come home then at night, I don't know if they still have libido at all. What do you think about that?
Right. Yeah. I used to always joke that for me, like, bored Pam is horny Pam, because, like, unless I had spaciousness in my life, time, space where I didn't have to do anything, it was really hard for me to access desire. And I think that's absolutely true for some people. There's different models for how desire works in a human body. One of them is more of a spontaneous model, meaning I can just, like, walk through life, get some sort of stimulus, and be, bam, 100% ready for sex. And so for those people, I think working really hard and then you're home and you have an opportunity to have sex and you go for it. Those people that have spontaneous desire, that's not really going to necessarily inhibit their sex life, because they don't see, they have easy access to desire in their bodies. Other people who have what's called responsive desire, these are more of the slow burn people. You can kind of do the gym analogy. You know, there's the people who are, like, always ready to go to the gym. Even if they've worked a long, hard day, they're like, gym, you know? And then there's the other people that are like, only once they get in the middle of the workout or by the end of the workout, they're like, wow, I feel really good. That was great. I should have gone to the gym, you know? There's people like that for sex, right? Before sex, they're like, oh my God, sex. And there's other people that are kind of like, once they get into the middle of sex or even at the end, they're like, wow, like, why don't I want that more? You know, those are responsive desire people. They're responsive gym people too, right? So I think for those people, when you pack your day and you never find the space for transition, the place for that slow ramp to build, you know, if you don't actively invest in the idea of physical or even emotional intimacy, a very packed life will prove exceedingly challenging for a good sex life.
And what do you think the partner can do to have more understanding, then to have more empathy for the partner who has lower libido, so they can still stay together and not break up just because of that?
Right. It's a great question. I was just talking with someone about, you know, marriages that are sexless or that don't have a lot in it. And it is kind of this where you have someone with higher desire, someone with lower desire. That can be a very tension-filled situation, especially because, like, and it's not good on either part. You know, the higher desire partner tends to feel rejected and doesn't want to initiate anymore. And the lower desire partner tends to feel like super guilty or broken. And so there, that will happen over time. And so what can the higher desire partner do, you know, to better understand the lower desire partner? And I would ask the same question the other way as well, right? So the higher desire partner, I think there's one great book, which I definitely recommend everyone read, which is called Come As You Are, by Dr. Emily Nagowski. She's a great author, and she really explains what's going on for the lower desire partner. It's some of the stuff that I've been talking about here, which is, hey, I just, like, lived in a world where I was taught to shut it down. And maybe I'm okay with that and maybe I'm not, right? So it kind of depends on, you know, where the partner's at. So I think just understanding them, reading that book is a good place to start. And I also think having the conversation with the lower desire partner, because again, neither person's right or wrong, but if they want to stay together, they need to understand each other a little bit and find maybe some common ground. So for the higher desire partner to say something like, hey, I love you. I love what we have. And physical intimacy is important to me. And I want to explore how to make it better between us, right? So there's two things that are happening in that statement. One is to own the fact that they desire to have more and better intimacy. And not in a needy or a blamey way, right? Because it can be like, we don't have enough sex. Like, there's something wrong with you. Like, that's just going to make the lower desire partner feel bad and defensive. And that's not helpful. Or the higher desire partner can feel guilty about wanting sex and just feel like they're supposed to just shut it down. But that's going to be just as destructive for the relationship. So learning how to stay in the conversation, but from like a loving and curious point of view, is really where it's at. Sometimes that's really hard to do on your own. And so that's when I advise, like, it was definitely true for me. Like, we could not have this conversation alone. Like, we tried for like 15 years. It did not work. So we really needed to get outside help. And there's people that are trained to help you have that conversation. So, but yeah, so just like know that it's okay to have higher desire. It's beautiful. I want to high five high desire people because I'm like, I'm so jealous of you. so I want them to know that they're okay and their partner's okay. And it's just a matter of like learning more so we can figure out the best fit.
Yeah, thank you. I watched your TED talk and you also mentioned it earlier that it is so important to talk to your friends about it. And you said how much it helped you, but how do you start that?
Yeah, it's so funny because it's not, I mean, I think some people do talk about it. I am not one of those people. Like that was not, I never talked to any of my girlfriends about it. And so it was really nerve-wracking for me to reach out to my friends and say like, hey, like, do you want to get together in the park and talk about it? And I think I shared it on my TEDx talk is like, when I asked my girlfriends, they all pretended they were going to yoga. They all put on yoga clothes and like literally told their partners they were going to yoga when in fact they were going to the park to talk about sex. Yeah, I mean, for me, if you wanted to get started, I would just pick the friend, you know, first of all, you'll probably be like embarrassed to say it to any of your friends, or not probably, maybe be embarrassed to ask any of your friends, but just pick one that you feel like, okay, I can ask her. And usually, sometimes the response is, no, I'm not interested, thanks for asking. But oftentimes the response is, oh my gosh, yes, when can we get together and do that? And that usually will get the ball rolling on being able to ask other friends. You know, being unattached to whether the person says yes or no. I provide, for women who really want to get started with this, but want some more assistance, like I have like basically a 4-page PDF where I, you know, kind of outline like how you would reach out to girlfriends, what you might say, and then also how you would like run. Usually what I recommend is like get together for like 2 hours with some wine, you know, some evening at someone's house and have a particular topic. So maybe in the first hour you're, you know, getting your drinks and your snacks and you're just kind of catching up generally. And then maybe for the second hour you have a topic. And so in my little PDF, I give like some topics, like, why don't you talk about, just like we started off this conversation, like what messages did you hear about sex when you were younger? I guess nice to just hear what other women have heard, you know? I have a discussion topic around masturbation, right? This is something most girlfriends don't talk to their girlfriends about, right? Like, you're like, do you do it? When did you learn about it? How do you do it? These are things that we don't necessarily like really get into detail around. But it can be so relieving or insightful to have that conversation. So yeah, and there's all sorts of, you know, you could look on Amazon, there's like questions about sex, like a little card deck, you know, you could just pick the questions out of the deck. So many ways of going about it. But when I did that with my girlfriends and I kind of watched what happened to them over a year, I was kind of noticing, wow, everyone feels so much less stressed about this. So many women have tried different things that they never thought to try. Most of them seem happier, like getting better sex. They're able to talk to their kids about sex. So I actually decided to do some, I was getting my master's in clinical psychology and I decided to actually research it to see if there was like, you know, some quantitative evidence that would show that this like quote works. And it does. If you meet with your girlfriends once a week for a few months, or once a month for a few months, or once a week for a few weeks, there's like measurable difference in your stress levels and your satisfaction around sex.
And that PDF, do you have that on your website, or where can people download?
If you go to my website, which is downtothere.com, there's a services tab and you can just click on, there's a little button there. Maybe we can put the link in the show notes or something like that. Yeah.
We'll do that. Do you think it makes sense to talk to the same gender, so women to women and guys to guys, or would it also make sense to talk to a good male friend about that?
Yeah, such a good question. What the research says around conversations with peers is it's actually mixed. It's so funny. There's research that says, yes, like groups that are similar, like same age, same experience, same gender, are great because they feel so seen and understood, right? But then there's other research that says, yes, groups that are diverse in nature with different ages and different experiences and different gender are great because you get to see your similarities and your differences. So the research is mixed, says both is good. And my experience in running groups, because I kind of have my own group and now I kind of facilitate other groups, is that there are some people where it feels safer to have the conversation just among same gender, and then that feels good to them. And then there's other people who are like, wow, I really just want to hear like the full breadth and depth of the experience, right? And also to realize, maybe there's a guy who's experiencing lower libido in partnership and we're doing a co-ed group, and he identifies with a woman who's having a lower libido experience, right? And then a higher libido woman identifies with a higher. And so you start to realize that it's not really about gender, although there are some conversations that have a gender slant to them. I ran a group recently. It was like 60 people in a circle, and it was men and women. And it was one of my most favorite group experiences. So I would say start where you're comfortable. And if you gain comfort in going across gender norms there, go for it, right?
Yeah, that's great. Do you think it makes a difference if you have your cell phone in your bedroom and your TV maybe? What do you have any recommendations what the bedroom should look like to get into more?
Yeah, so again, I think this is where understanding how your own sexuality works, or how your ability to be in your body works, right? And not just yourself, but your partner. Right. So there are some people who, sure, I can be on my phone, I can check a quick message, I can put it down, and I can be boop, in the mood. Right. And then there are other people where that doesn't work for them at all. Right. To get in the mood, they need the right lighting. They need the right smells. They need the right temperature. They need the right music. And they need time from the last thing that it is that they did. And so for those people, yeah, having, watching TV is probably going to be the opposite of getting you in the mood, right? Or being on your phone all the time. And so just kind of being aware of your partners, like, if your partner's the type of person that needs an on-ramp, like, don't be frustrated that you guys are sitting there in bed working on your computers and then you shut it off and they don't immediately behave amorously towards you. Like, that's not how they function. So even if it's how you function, you need to be really careful about setting an environment. Or if I'm the type of person that does that, right? Like, if I'm rushing all the time, I'm not likely to find space and desire to be intimate. So I do think it's an inside job first to understand how you work, to notice what makes me more likely to feel turned on, alive in my body. And then to do a little detective work, like, asking your partner, hey, like, when do you feel? Like, do you ever feel in the mood? When does that happen? How might we construct a daily, weekly, monthly, whatever pattern around creating some space for that?
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful. Do you have a favorite success story of the people you work with?
Oh, that's such a good question. I've never been asked that before. You know, I think generally when people slow down, and it's funny because I'm slowing down even my answer to this, right? It's like when people slow down enough to be surprised, you know, even the person who thinks that they totally understand how they work sexually, right? Or the person who thinks they don't know it all, but they slow down enough to notice something and then they're surprised, right? And delighted. Like, how great is that to learn something new about yourself, right? I just think anytime that happens, it's just so exciting to see. I also think there's something around watching people get empowered in their no, because what happens around sex is it becomes a lot of shoulds. It should look this way. I should do this. I should feel this. And what happens there is we actually bypass like our yes, no, maybe. So for people to get back in touch with no is the only place where yes becomes authentic. And so to watch, you know, someone in a session be asked like, well, do you like this or do you want this? And for them to say no without the guilt about it and just, you know, checking in and saying, huh, no, like my body says no to that, you know, and then if their partner can actually hold that without feeling rejected and go, oh, okay, thanks. Like that feels really good that you know that you're no for that. Are you a yes to something else, right? And for the person to like check in with what they might be a yes to or make a suggestion or, you know, change the idea that sex is penis and vagina, orgasm, done, right? But to notice, oh, I'm in my body and I'm discovering this new thing and I'm feeling this urge to do this. And it maybe is just like a whole session of just like touching your arm or something, you know? Yeah, I think every time I see that, it's just, I mean, beautiful.
Yeah, I can tell you look so radiant when you talk about that. Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to share?
You know, I do think it's so funny. There's a couple of things I always like to share with people if this is going to be like the one chance they get to talk to a sex coach or a sex educator, right? And I've shared a few of those. Like, first of all, whatever your experiences are, I guarantee they're normal. Second is that, you know, the idea that desire looks differently for everyone and to get really curious about how it looks for you and your partner, like the spontaneous versus responsive. And I guess the last thing that I always find is very useful for people to hear is the fact that sex looks different over a lifetime. You know, we do have these ideas of what sex is supposed to look like or how our bodies are supposed to respond, right? Guys get the message like this, you know, I should always be ready and I should always last a really long time, right? Like that's... It's not a great message, and it's certainly not true biologically, right? Like we age and things shift. And when we define sex as penis and vagina and orgasm and everyone should last the right amount of time, and that's just so much pressure that we actually don't function really well under pressure. But when we remove that pressure and when we expand the definition, you can have great sex as a guy, and I'll talk about the woman in a second, for a lifetime. So I like the idea of being realistic about what our bodies do and look like, but also like celebratory of like, and none of that matters. Like you can have great sex for a lifetime. So I think that's nice. And for women as well, I don't think we get a lot of conversation around our body and changes. I mean, we hear menopause and hot flashes and everything, but we don't understand like, oh, you know, there can be changes in hormones that affect, you know, fragility of tissues or, you know, how much lubrication there is. Like, or still, I have lube in my office, and I always joke that it's, you know, for take home, not for use in the office. But that there's this kind of, like, I don't know, disdain for, you know, lubrication, like using lube, or that, you know, you might have to, like, use a cock ring or hold, like, something in a specific way to get blood flow, maximum blood flow. And so I just want to, like, let everyone know these are just normal things that happen to us when we age, and there's so many ways to navigate them to still have a great and healthy sex life. So I think it's important for people to know that like, things do change over lifetime. But again, like, if you're ever struggling, just, like, you know, reach out to a doctor, a therapist, a coach, because there's so much that can be done to make sure that you're having great, pain-free, satisfying sex.
Yeah, thank you for talking so openly about that, because that's definitely not an easy topic for many people. I'm really impressed by your openness.
Yeah, I always just hate it when someone's like, oh, I just thought that was the way it was supposed to be, right? I thought it was going to be painful, or I thought, like, well, now this is just the way it is, so I can't do that anymore. I'm like, no, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Wonderful. Where are you located at? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I work with clients in person here. Sometimes I travel, but yeah, and then I also work with clients online and at various workshops. So yeah, folks can find me at downtothere.com. I am doing a workshop at a place called Esalen. It's in Big Sur this coming summer. So that's in June 2020. Yeah, and I also lead online peer groups. So it's not so much working with me directly, but I'll, you know, if you're kind of scared to start that conversation with your friends, you can join my monthly group, and I will just kick off the conversation. I'll be like, here's the topic, and I hit a little button, and you all go into groups with smaller groups of women or men. I run groups for both, and yeah, so I'm happy to, and email, you can always email me, pam@downtothere.com.
Okay. Pam, thank you so, so very much for that inspiring interview, and so much for sharing your time with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.